Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, executive producer Jonathan Strickland at HowStuffWorks.com. Happy Friday the 13th. This episode's originally going out on October 13th, 2017, and I was originally just going to publish a regular Tech Stuff episode, but then my producer extraordinaire, Ramsey, came up to me and said, hey, I put some feelers out with some of the folks who are behind the development for Friday the 13th, the game. Would you be interested in talking with them so we could have a special Friday the 13th episode? And I thought, I've never done a Friday the 13th episode. I've done Halloween episodes and I've done other holiday episodes, but never Friday the 13th. And I thought, this is an opportunity I cannot pass up. And so what you are about to hear is an interview that I conducted with Chuck Brungardt, the CEO of Illphonic. That's the company that developed Friday the 13th, the game. And he was very forthcoming and very straightforward about the development of Friday the 13th, the game, the challenges that his company faced, and the reactions of that. I mean, it's a very honest interview, which I appreciate. So I hope you guys enjoy this, and I will join you again on the other side of the interview. I'd like to welcome Chuck Brungardt to the show. Chuck, thank you so much for joining Tech Stuff.
Thanks for having me.
And Chuck is a co-founder of Illphonic LLC. It's a company that developed Friday the 13th, the game. Obviously, that's there's the relationship between game developers and game publishers, something that I think a lot of people who aren't really familiar with the way video games work, they kind of conflate the two. Of course, there are some companies that are both developers and publishers, and that makes it even more confusing. But you are the guys who actually went and started making a game that now is Friday the 13th. As I understand it, when you were first looking at developing a game in this space, it was certainly inspired by properties like Friday the 13th or something like Sleepaway Camp. But it was, from what I understand, it was a kind of an original IP at that point. The licensing agreement came later. Is that correct?
Yes, definitely. And really kind of how it all started was, you know, Gun Media, who's our publisher on this project, they actually kind of came up with the original concept. And it was, you know, a game that they always wanted to make that they were kicking around. And I remember I got the call from Wes, who's their CEO, one day and said, hey, I'm, you know, looking for a developer to develop this game. And, you know, it's called Summer Camp. And the first thing I thought of is I was like, well, I don't know if you did too much research about us, but we don't make kids games. So I'm not sure if we can help you. And he's like, well, let me show you this trailer. It's actually called Slasher Volume 1 Summer Camp. And I think immediately I got it. Like, you know, it kind of oozed Friday the 13th, even though it wasn't yet that. It was, you know, it was called Summer Camp at the time. And but they brought on a lot of the original people from Friday the 13th, like, you know, like Harry Manfredini and, you know, like just kind of all the different guys, Tom Savini. And I think they, you know, they were all talking about making this game, and it was really just a game that they wanted to make from growing up and watching these films. And so I think that was always the tricky part is, like, you know, what do we do for the killer if we can't really, you know, have the hockey mask and all that. So yeah, when we were approached eventually, it kind of all made sense and really tied together. But we were originally moving forward on a prototype and had, you know, put out some material that we were kind of showing early of what Summer Camp was to hopefully build interest within the consumers and the press. But then that led to, you know, Sean Cunningham and his estate seeing it and approaching Gunn and us about it.
And it was such a clever idea. It's an example of a type of gameplay, the asymmetric approach. And for people who are not familiar with that, asymmetric means that you typically have at least two teams or two parties of players. And in this case, we're talking about a single player taking on the role of Jason Voorhees, obviously the antagonist of the Friday the 13th series, the iconic character who, through parts two and on, is the main antagonist. Obviously, if anyone is listening, I know Mrs. Voorhees was the bad guy in part one. Everybody knows that. But from part two forward, we have Jason. And asymmetric means that you have one person acting as Jason Voorhees. You have the other players acting as camp counselors. And the goals are for one side to escape, that would be the counselors, to get away, or potentially even to take down Jason, although that is particularly difficult, as is warranted by the mythology of the movies. Of course, Jason's goal is to eliminate as many, if not all, the counselors as he possibly can. And it's interesting because it combines elements of gameplay that I find really compelling. You have the competitive aspect of Jason versus the counselors, but you also have co-op with the point of the counselors. You know, if they work together, they stand a much better chance of having success, at least for some of them, than they would if they all go lone wolf.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what was so crazy about the concept is when I first heard it, I'm like, oh, that just works, right? It works in you know, almost a real life scenario where you know, everyone wants to know, would you survive a horror film? Like, what would you do? And I think early tests, it was kind of funny because, you know, Jason's so powerful and that's definitely intentional. And I think the asymmetrical aspects behind it, we worked on other asymmetrical games in the past, and that was one of the reasons why Gunn reached out to us. But we didn't really, you know, a lot of times it was trying to make it balanced and you know, trying to make one person or one thing against multiple people balanced was very tricky, and it could also sometimes ruin a bit of the fun. But when we kind of threw that out the window, I mean, there's still balance that goes into this stuff. But when we realize, like, you know, Jason is going to be able to take on, you know, more than one person at a time, it really started fitting, and it kind of essentially created almost two games where you're either the powerful Jason hunting people down and killing them, and you know, stalking and kind of just all the different elements involved in that. And then as counselors, you're getting away and you kind of have those big horror elements and everything like that where, you know, you're scared, you're trying to hide. And we really just saw everyone kind of playing into what happens in horror films. Like when, you know, you're always like, oh, don't go in that room alone. Or, oh, you know, if you're with your friends, are you going to stick around and like help them? But, you know, everyone just kind of scatters and runs all different directions. And that's usually when all the bad stuff happens. So it was really interesting because you have the human element. And I think that, that power, you know, the power struggle or power balance, it really worked well with asymmetrical gameplay. And I think, you know, there's so many things you could kind of apply that to, when it comes to either other films or other ideas as well.
Oh, sure. And it's interesting. It's very, in a way, it's affirming and in another way, terrifying to see that the tropes of the horror film play out in actual gameplay. Because I've watched more than my share of Let's Plays in this game, and I've played a couple where, as you say, it is more frequently than not, as soon as the game starts, you just see the counselors scatter like ants. And immediately you're thinking like, well, we're all going to get picked off one by one now, so that's going to be interesting. I am a little curious about this because, as you say, you know, you didn't have to worry. I mean, obviously, balance is always something you've got to think about. Otherwise, if you create a game where it is impossible for one team to win, then really you've just created a murder simulator. There's not really any way to get out of it. So you have to figure out, all right, well, what are the parameters here for victory on both sides? And how can we make sure that if you are not the killer, that you're still having a good time? Can you talk a little bit about what that process was like, about just kind of finding where that balance was?
Yeah. I mean, you know, To be honest, I feel like there's a bit of a pendulum swing, you know, and even, you know, sometimes we'll patch and we think we take a lot of feedback in from the community, what they like, what they don't like. So, you know, I guess to back up and kind of start from the beginning, we did prototype really early on. And I think, you know, the biggest thing we found is it was really fun to play Jason, but it wasn't fun to play counselors. So we spent a lot of time on the counselor angle, and, you know, we have a lot of things like fear, and the more you get scared, there's things that happen, the screen darkens, you tend to lose your HUD. You know, there's just an alteration that goes on, like visually as well, and then there's some audio cues that happen to kind of intensify everything. And we had this tripping mechanic where, you know, the more scared you were, the more you would tend to trip and stumble, and that was you know, a very delicate mechanic because it was very frustrating in the beginning when we first built it. So, you know, you're running around and then you had this thing kind of constantly taking control of your character. So we had to figure out how do we give that effect but not make it as annoying. So so there were some levers to kind of pull there and you know, dial balance back and forth on that end. But it just, you know, in the beginning it just wasn't great to be a counselor because Jason was just so overpowered. But then we kind of got the counselors feeling right, but then it wasn't fun to be Jason. So we had to figure out how to kind of just go back and forth. And it was really just a lot of playtesting. I mean, you know, iteration is key in games. Playtesting is key. So we kind of went through that process and playtested a lot and, you know, always kind of took feedback. There was, we brought in some people early on and had them play the game and kind of got feedback from them. And, you know, the initial reaction is everyone really loved the game, so that was great. But once, you know, they spent a little more time with it, we're able to kind of identify the problems. But yeah, and even today, though, I think we're still kind of potentially swinging the pendulum because, well, you know, there'll be some really good ideas and thoughts that the community brings up and then just things that we've sat with for a while during our play test. And, you know, we'll kind of alter some numbers and then sometimes that goes out and people are like, oh, no, like, you know, now Jason isn't fun to play or, you know, and, you know, now he's too overpowered and a lot more fun to play, but it's too hard to be a counselor. So it always is a bit of kind of massaging to make it right. And, you know, for the most part, I think we find a good balance between the two. But, you know, I think everyone kind of has their own opinions and sometimes even our opinions change the longer we kind of sit with the game. So it is kind of interesting. I mean, I wouldn't tell you like we we have it exactly right. But you know, for the most part, I mean, there's a lot that goes into what makes it, you know, kind of fun as it is now. So.
Well, and I think it's really interesting. I mean, you bring up a great point in the idea of massaging this game and being able to tweak things and alter things. It points to a very different landscape today than games just 10 years ago, where once a game shipped, that was pretty much it, right? You didn't really have the opportunity to create a lot of patches or updates. And so, you know, if you created a game that had some mechanic that apparently just displeased players, then you were kind of stuck with it. But now you're in a world where there's good parts and bad parts. One thing is that you can go back in and you can take in this feedback and you can make adjustments to the game and thus hopefully create a better experience for players so that they're having more fun, or you're adding in elements so that the game is constantly fresh for players. But of course, the flip side of that is that you are fostering a game much longer. You know, it's not that it ships out the door and you immediately turn to the next thing. So is that something that is, I assume it's very different from your perspective. From a player's perspective, I love having a game where I'm constantly getting tweaks and updates, and it is refreshing the game, and it makes me want to play it again because I want to see what the new experience is like. I'm not sure what it's like on your side of the equation, though.
Yeah, no, I would say, you know, to be honest, it's a blessing and a curse, right? I mean, I think, we were a small team that worked on this. We're a small company and, you know, there was a certain amount of people internally that were on this project. And, you know, so being a small team, it's tough to, continue to roll out content. And, you know, luckily with the success of the game, we've been able to grow, but, you know, when we're kind of getting towards launch, it's like, okay, well, we know we're going to need to keep working on this and we're going to get feedback from the community. And we're guns like five people, they're getting a little bigger now, but, and I think we had about, you know, 20 people on the game as well internally here. So we weren't like with a big publisher where they could have hundreds of people they could throw at it. And you get all these different studios and, you know, people at the publishing company to kind of give a lot of feedback and kind of help with certain areas. So, you know, we kind of knew that we were throwing this thing out there and we'd get some feedback, but we were committed to supporting that. So it is awesome from our standpoint because it's like we got to launch the game. People liked it. I mean, obviously there was issues when it launched. But for the most part, people really liked it. They had a lot of fun. We knew, you know, moving forward that we would kind of fix and address these issues and constantly spend time updating, adding new content into it, but it was a bit of a growing process for us as well. And really, it's interesting because I started before this actually in the music industry, and it was nice because when you finish an album, you know, there's so much work you put into it, and then you know, it goes off to like mastering, and then, you know, the artist has to then kind of take it from there and promote it, but we were more behind the scenes, so we could just say, oh, okay, we're done. That's awesome. We could go to sleep at night. It's either going to sell well. It maybe, you know, is a hit or maybe not. And then it's kind of on to the next thing. But, you know, with this kind of being a game as a service, we're constantly updating it, constantly thinking about it. You know, there's some nights where you can't sleep, just due to some issues you might run into or issues that end up out there. And then there's other times where you can't sleep because you're like, how do I make this even more better? You know, how do I keep refining it? So, you know, so like I said, I think it's been a big learning experience for us and the team. And it's, you know, we've been, kind of getting into the groove now of really kind of supporting it and turning around content and patches and updates and all that. But, you know, it's something that we had to really work into. And we kind of, as a company had to learn to work that way. And we brought on some really talented, developers, here at Illphonic that actually had experience with that at other companies, so they're able to kind of help us shift our company towards that direction. But even before then, I mean, I would say like even our early games or work for hire games we did, you know, there still were online multiplayer games, so they were still updated and kind of, you know, moved through, but nothing really to this level. So yeah, it was definitely a learning experience, but it's great. I mean, it allows you, you know, if the game wasn't that successful, it kind of allows us to, you know, support it still until the community kind of eventually starts dying down. But in this case, it kind of allows us to support it a lot longer and put a lot of things in there that originally were like, this would be great to have, but, you know, it's not in the budget or the scope at the time. So I think that's what's cool is we get to really always kind of put those ideas that, you know, games in the past would kind of leave on the cutting room floor.
Right. And that kind of leads us into, you've talked about community, and there's clearly a very vocal and active community in the Friday the 13th, the game. I mean, like I said, I've watched lots of Let's Plays in this as well as playing the game. I was one of the backers of Friday the 13th, full disclosure.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so you guys had a very successful crowdfunding campaign, which I assume was very gratifying because it showed that there were players out there who were feeling just as strongly about this concept of really diving into this world of classic slasher horror kind of fiction and bringing it into a you know, a playable experience. Can you talk a little bit about the you know, how that worked when you did the crowdfunding and sort of the feedback you got? And I assume that was pretty energizing to the group to see that kind of level of enthusiasm before you even had a game to ship.
Yeah, no, it was really awesome because I think, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into, you know, making a Kickstarter or doing Kickstarter and just, you know, all the videos and all the content we have to make to keep people engaged and to really have them buy into our vision. It's like, you know, we all have it in our heads, but how do we show a community of people of that? So we were really, you know, really nervous going into it. We're like, oh, are people going to gravitate towards this? I mean, you know, luckily we had Friday the 13th and the franchise behind us, but it's really tricky because we just didn't know. We felt like people would be into this and as much as we were, but we just didn't know. So when a lot of people, you know, started kind of coming out and saying, hey, this is great, this is exactly what we're looking for, and really supporting us and backing us, I mean, it was an amazing feeling, but it was a crazy, you know, month, kind of 30-day roller coaster ride of trying to make sure, you know, I mean, we had an initial plan, and then I think, you know, after we launched probably 3 or 4 days into it, we still kind of executed on that plan, but there was a lot more we started doing because I think that's when we started building a community. There became a lot of questions, and, you know, people wanted to understand how the game played more and what things were going to look like and how it was going to run and work and all that. And so I think it, you know, it was pretty crazy, but I think it became very, I guess, a lot more work than we figured it would be because we wanted to try to answer all those questions and continue to show people what we're building. Obviously, we knew that would help the crowdfunding, but we also wanted to just have fans really buy into the vision. So yeah, it was a great experience, really cool. I mean, it. You know, but also at the same time, it was a ton of work, and like Randy and those guys at Gun all really put so much into it as well. I mean, they just kind of really stayed on top of everything and made sure that everything was kind of running smoothly and that people were getting their questions answered and all that stuff. So it was a cool experience.
I imagine some of those questions even led to developing things that you had not initially considered, because in my experience, you know, you have a brainstorming group, you get people together, you start coming up with ideas, then you start to put those into some form of structure and you move on from there. And then you think you've got a pretty good idea of what you have from beginning to end. You know, it's maybe not complete, but you're fairly confident. And then you open it up and right. People start asking questions, and they're asking things that you're like, wow, I really should have thought of that, and I totally didn't. And that's a legitimate point.
Yeah, or we didn't think enough about that, right? You know, because maybe that won't work that we thought would work so well. But yeah, I think, you know, once we got the ideas out there, I mean, it was kind of tricky though, because anything you would say sometimes could be taken as gospel essentially. So we would, you know, someone would throw out an idea and maybe we weren't communicating to each other. And then all of a sudden we noticed that that idea would really stick in the community. So it's, you know, I think that's why games for so long have been kind of developed in this very closed, I guess, dark environment where, you know, you don't even really hear about it. And then maybe a year, 2 years on some of these big AAA projects before they come out, they might announce it, but they're careful with what they show. And, you know, everyone starts having ideas and kind of questions and all that kind of stuff. But I think because we were so open with what we were trying to build, you know, you would throw out an idea and it would be something that we might have just talked about briefly, but we didn't vet it yet. And everyone would gravitate towards that. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe this is a great idea. And now we have to figure out how to make it work. So it was definitely a different way of developing. I would say, I mean, but I think it was for the better, right? I think it allowed us to kind of talk about things early on that maybe we were understanding, like, oh, people don't really understand what we're trying to go for here. Maybe it's too complex of a mechanic. You know, how do we make it simpler? And I think, you know, at the end of the day, there was one point where we felt no one was going to understand how to play this game, how to play as Jason, how to play as counselors, and what the missions and objectives were for. So we started going into this like, okay, we need way more UI so people can understand this stuff. And, you know, we need way more feedback on things. And I think there were some parts where we started going a little too overboard in handholding. And then there was parts where it kind of just made the perfect balance of someone seeing a mechanic, getting some visual feedback and understanding what it was. So we're pretty surprised when we did the beta that people were able to just kind of pick it up and play for the most part. But it was kind of interesting because, you know, we didn't know if that would happen or not, but at the end of the day, we're kind of putting people in a bit of real life, you know, survival kind of instinct areas, I guess. So it did work out well.
Yeah, it's the sort of game that kind of rewards some experimentation as well, where, you know, if you're casting about a little bit, you might discover a strategy that works that you would not have necessarily thought of. But at the same time, it's not like it's a game where you jump in and you can pick up absolutely everything and you have no idea which thing is relevant and which one isn't. I've played those style games too, which are, you know, it's very immersive to be in a world where your character can manipulate practically anything in the environment. But then at that point, you start asking yourself, oh, but does this matter that I can do this? Or is this just a cool gimmick that's distracting me? And so it's nice to see balance there too. I appreciate a game where you can more easily hone in on what's really important, especially if you happen to have a 7-foot-tall behemoth with a machete bearing down on you at the time. Snap decisions are pretty important in that case. So let's talk a little bit. So what are some of the challenges that you did encounter in the development of this game? You know, we talked about how obviously the balance was something and figuring out, you know, how to communicate with the community, almost a collaborative process with the community in some respects. Obviously this was a pretty ambitious project. And as you mentioned, it was a relatively modest team, a small team, not a talented one, but a small one. So what are some of the challenges you encountered throughout the development process?
Oh, wow. I think we bumped our heads every which way. I mean, I could probably go on this topic for a while. But no, I think, you know, anytime you're creating something new and different, there's, you know, and especially in games in general, you're pretty much encountering issues daily, right? And I think, you know, some of it would be, I don't know, as big as when we launched, our technology wasn't really able to scale. We built a lot of this stuff internally and we never had a game that was this successful. So we would, you know, on day one, we came off the beta and basically said, oh, okay, well, we had maybe, I don't know, 5,000 concurrent players or something on the beta. So let's, you know, if we get 4 or 5 times that, we'll be good. But I think we had, oh, let's see, probably 20 times that. So we weren't really in day one. So we really weren't ready for that. And, you know, we didn't have enough servers up. It didn't scale properly. So, I mean, that was a big one. You know, some of the technology and just that we used and, you know, console development in general is pretty difficult. And being a small team working across three platforms is another big challenge as well. But even just gameplay, getting things right, it would always be, you know, okay, you know, do we have players play more inside houses? Like, how do we draw more into house? Like, I think the gameplay styles changed a lot. Like, in the beginning, I think Illphonic had a lot of ideas for it being more of an outdoor game, where I think Gun felt it should be more of an indoor game, because they wanted a lot more of those like survival horror elements of like hiding and barricading and, you know, using the cabins as cover and all that kind of stuff from Jason. But I think we had a kind of a different maybe style of play in our heads. So a lot of it was kind of coming together between both teams to say, you know, okay, we get what you want here. This is kind of what we're thinking here. And, you know, we kind of meet in the middle. And I think, and then sometimes it would even swing more towards, you know, one team's suggestions versus another. But I think we were, you know, very aligned on what we wanted. And there was a lot of communication. I mean, there was daily talks, you know, we were in so many meetings with this game, because I think a lot of things kind of swung back and forth. But another thing that was challenging too is, you know, what features really need to go in there. And after a while, we just felt early on like, okay, well, this is a fun game, but it's starting to lose its fun. So we need to give the players a bit more things to do. And at first, we never were going to have the car drivable. It was just going to be, you know, you get the car parts and kind of put them on the car, and, you know, you end up getting in, there's like a cutscene or something, and then you escape. But we felt after kind of testing a lot that would happen pretty quickly. And then, you know, I think Gunn, those guys over there basically suggested, hey, what do you guys think about a drivable car? And we were kind of terrified because we were like, well, we don't really have the time for that right now. And those are, you know, that's a whole new element to the game. So the car was really challenging. But I think we all kind of said, you know, it could be a little bit janky because, you know, we think it's going to bring enough moments to the table that if the car does have some problems here or there, we just kind of try to figure out how to solve those. But we knew we were kind of opening up and biting off a lot. So, you know, it forced us to kind of work a bunch of late hours. But I think we were all passionate about the idea because we knew it'd make it better. And I think we got the car in pretty quickly in a rough state. But, you know, most games, when you look at, like, I don't know, Grand Theft Auto or even, like, you know, some of the other racing games out there, it's all very track-based. There's areas where the cars can and cannot go. You can take them a bit off-road, but for the most part, the games are built for vehicles, whereas this, it wasn't really from the beginning built for vehicles. So we're like, okay, well, what happens if they start driving the car off into the forest or hit big rock boulders and all this kind of stuff? So we tried to really, like, contain the car a little bit more into road so that it would make it easier for gameplay, but at the same time, it could really go anywhere the player wanted to go. But I think that was something that, you know, turned the game around to be really fun and add this extra element, I think, went really well for streaming and all that kind of stuff. Even the voiceover IP end was kind of an idea that came up at one point and said, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, you could hear each other talk with proximity, so counselors could talk to each other, and then that kind of lent to the walkie-talkie idea. Yeah. We wanted it where it's like, oh, Jason could kind of yell at people, or, you know, you could have people as Jason running after stuff, you know, after them, saying stuff to them. So we thought that would add an important element, but that was very challenging because we didn't really have, you know, the engine has very basic voiceover IP, and not all platforms supported the ability to kind of take the voiceover IP and put it in the 3D space. So that was a big challenge. But once we thought it was a good idea and kind of prototyped it out, we had to have it. And, you know, we did whatever it took to make it happen.
So did your team actually develop the various versions for each of the platforms, so PC, Xbox, and PS4?
We actually ended up doing all three platforms. We used Unreal Engine 4, which had a lot of that stuff already in there. So it allowed us to kind of develop one game and then go to the other platforms and kind of hit all the certification standards. So, I mean, there was still a ton of work, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think we did it very quick as far as supporting all three platforms. So that was a really big challenge because we're also, we worked on an Xbox One and a PlayStation 4 game before, but not a game where we had to take it kind of from A to C, start to finish by ourselves as a group. So there was a lot of areas that we kind of learned and, bumped our heads on. But for the most part, I mean, there was a lot that is there already from Unreal Engine 4, but you still have to kind of do all the user-facing stuff on your own. And there's a lot of work there, and there's a lot of work that goes into just, making sure that when you unplug a controller or something like that, that it displays the right message and the messaging is different between the different platforms by different standards and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the reason why I was asking is because, obviously there are a lot of companies out there that will develop a game for a specific platform, and then they end up using, a third party to go and port that over to other platforms. So to have this one tight team working on building a game, really building the game for the most part once, but then having to make those adjustments for the various platforms, that is not a trivial problem. That's a lot of work. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily think about that when they're looking at a game that's across multiple platforms. They don't necessarily know that in many cases that's been worked on by different companies, not let alone different teams. So I think it's just very impressive to see a single group tackle all of that. It's a very ambitious kind of approach. So when you talk about some of these challenges and bumping your head and things, you guys were tackling really a big, big challenge. You're talking about a beloved property, so there's a high level of expectation among the potential audience there. You're talking about a relatively fast turnaround. I mean, as I understand it, summer camp was, you got started on that somewhere around 2015. And, there's some games out there that have infamously long development cycles. So that's pretty fast. And you had a relatively small team. So while you ran into a lot of challenges along the way, and the launch was rough and the scaling was an issue, when you know the whole story, when you know what was going on behind the scenes, you start to see it was a monumental undertaking, really, when you get down to it. So I certainly appreciate that. That's one of those things that when you learn more about how the industry works and you see this particular approach, you get a greater appreciation for the work you guys were facing on a day-to-day basis. One other thing I wanted to talk about, really, and this is something that my producer Ramsey really wanted me to talk about too, is just how much this feels like Friday the 13th. And in large part, that's due to the involvement of people who were part of the Friday the 13th film franchise as well. You mentioned Harry Manfredini, who made the music for Friday the 13th, and he worked on the music for the game. He did the composing for the game, and Savini, who did effects, working on design for the game, and of course Kane Hodder, who played Jason Voorhees in various chapters of Friday the 13th, doing motion capture for the game. What was it like working with people who actually created the stuff that you're trying to emulate in a video game format?
Yeah, I mean, that was amazing. I mean, because I think, and I don't know, like licensed IP games tend to kind of get a bad rep because, they don't necessarily go through all the details. And I think that's something that really brought to the table was, even just when we shot the Kickstarter video at Sean Cunningham's house, it's like we all got to just sit around a table while people were doing interviews. or, you know, or whatever the cameras were setting up and all that kind of stuff. And we just got to kind of talk about, you know, oh, hey, so in like, you know, where did this come from? Or like, what was this idea based on? I mean, I think there's a lot more thinking that goes into this kind of stuff, I think, where, you know, I mean, these are people that these are their stories. They kind of created them. They helped tell these stories. They were around when it was shot. They were next to the writers. They were next to the actors. And, you know, I think some of it just kind of happens to just fall together naturally and they don't, you know, overthink it too much. But then, you know, I think later on down the line, they start thinking about a lot of things like, oh, so, you know, just different references to different parts of the films and if they're going to bring something back or, you know, what was the intention of making this part? So having access to those kind of guys and, you know, and having Kane, for example, just tell us like how you would get in the character and how, you know, why he moved the way he did in the films as Jason and, you know, what his kind of, stint as Jason's like brought to the table along with him kind of knowing all the other guys that played Jason, whether it was through convention or whatever else. He was able to kind of understand like, what their body types was like, body language. So there's a lot of details there and just being close with those guys just kind of living this for a number of years, you know, 20 plus years or whatever, it's, they were able to really like, they knew a lot of answers to questions we had. I mean, I think like Ronnie and Wes were kind of the Friday 13th Bible. I mean, there was times where they knew more than I think some of the guys that actually worked on it or created it did. And I think that's why they work really well because they're able to throw out a lot of that stuff when we were talking and they kind of got all these guys' blessing to really like either fill in blanks or kind of continue moving forward with certain things. And so I think that's what was really important between that relationship. But I mean, it just helped us really study the films and everything like that. So we're able to, I don't know, really nail down kind of what the feel was like. I mean, there was a day when we kind of sat around and just talked about color all day. And it, I think happened to be a conversation Wes had with maybe it was Tom Savini or Sean Cunningham. But at one point they were just talking about like, oh, you know, the cinematographer, like we would put, you know, this kind of paint on the walls to indicate certain things. So I think it just really translated well into the game because we would just kind of talk about how they shot it, how they filmed it, you know, what kind of film it was shot on, like how we would get that kind of effect and really go for the cinematic look and feel. But I think, you know, bringing Kane into it and bringing Harry into it, I mean, and Tom, it really just kind of added that extra element of now we got the movement, we got the feel, the mocap, everything is coming from the people that originally did this.
And I like also, you know, we didn't really mention this earlier, but in the game, there are different versions of Jason Voorhees based upon the different films, because obviously his look changes from some films to another. Sometimes it's a dramatic change. Sometimes it's more subtle. His preference for weapons can change. And of course, the iconic kills can change. So in the game, there are iconic kills you can do as Jason against the counselors, and they depend upon which Jason you're using. My own personal favorite, for reasons of nostalgia, is that you created a Friday the 13th NES version of Jason for the game.
Oh, yeah.
So you get your purple Jason. If people are not familiar, there was a Nintendo Entertainment System Friday the 13th game that was a very odd take on Jason Voorhees, and I love that that was a character that you could play in your game.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome. I mean, we actually call it Retro Jason.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think the for obvious reasons there, but we. Yeah, it was one that we were all, like, so strong about here. So I think it was even early on something we kind of did. And, you know, like, I think in a debug format, we would have, like, a lot of purple Jasons running around before we had the models all finished and stuff. So it was only kind of natural that we would kind of get that finished up and release it out to the wild. But yeah, I mean, that was something as a kid, I would say I remember it well. I don't remember the exact game. I mean, we kind of went back and watched YouTube videos and stuff, but I definitely remember playing that game, and, you know, Nintendo games are always super hard back in the day. So
yeah. No, if you think winning as a counselor is hard in Friday the 13th, the game, play any old school Nintendo game for 5 minutes and just take a moment to appreciate how things have changed. Not that the old games weren't fun. They were. They were just maddeningly difficult. So I've got a couple other more kind of goofy questions for you. One is there a particular, like, favorite detail that you have of the games? I mean, obviously it's like picking your favorite kid, but there's so much detail that goes into this game. Is there any particular, either an Easter egg or version of Jason or anything along those lines that you are particularly tickled by?
Yeah, it was cool with the Savini Jason, just seeing how popular that became and how everyone really wanted that Jason. I thought it was cool to watch them, you know, to watch Tom and, like, create that new Jason, right? Like, it's like, oh, wow, we're kind of adding on to that. I think the same for the Pamela tapes as well. I mean, that was something that was really interesting because it kind of brought in a whole new story of what happened kind of previously. I won't give it away too much in case people haven't listened to all of or collected all of them, but it was some new elements of the story. I mean, I don't know, I was really tied to the audio of the game because that's kind of what I worked on a lot. Like, I'm a programmer as well, so I wrote a lot of, like, the music systems and stuff like that. So that's just kind of the area that I was always in. But I don't know, the kills are really cool to see come along. It just, it's tricky. I don't know if I could kind of pick one detail because there was a lot of attention to detail, I think, when it came into making this game. And that was something that Gunn did a really good job bringing to the table. There had to be all the little details because they knew there'd be a vocal community with the Friday 13th community. And if we didn't do it right, I mean, I think we would have to run the other direction, right? So they really wanted to hit all of that on the head. And there was a lot of times where it'd be like even just a scratch on the mask where it's like, oh, no one's going to see this. But, you know, sure enough, we would put it on there. We would think like, oh, maybe we're wasting our time. And do we really need to go back and try to add this extra detail that we might have missed or something? And, you know, when that stuff came out, I mean, it was analyzed under a microscope. So we're kind of like, oh, you know, thank God we put that in there. Mm-hmm. Because the community noticed things like that. They noticed imperfection. There's a lot of, like, imperfections when it kind of comes to the mask, and even just like the eye holes, for example, are not symmetrical, and kind of getting those right and just all the angles of that and the shape of them. I mean, there was details down to that level, and it all went totally noticed by the community. So I think those were kind of, for me, probably the touches that I felt in the game that just went a really long way that were special.
Well, my last question for you is, what is your favorite film in the Friday the 13th franchise?
Wow.
I know, tough one, right?
It is a tough one. I mean, when personally I went back to kind of revisit the films when we started this game, I totally forgot Friday the original Friday the 13th. So I think that one was kind of special because, you know, I think growing up as a kid, like, you know, we were watching them all, but they just all kind of blend together and you always remember, like, the hockey mask, right?
And right.
I think, you know, seeing Sackhead and seeing, you know, kind of Pamela originally being the killer, I think that was probably more interesting to me. But I don't know, I think I still really like part three, probably, just kind of when everything started shaping up a little more, maybe. So I don't know. There's definitely like some you really love and then some that you're like, oh, that was pretty good. But, you know, so I don't know. What about you? What's your favorite one?
I mean, okay, so you're going to laugh. It's legitimately my favorite. I like Jason X. I love Jason in space.
Okay, yeah.
It is unapologetically ridiculous, but it's kind of celebrating in that, and I find joy there. I'm a big horror fan, so I love watching these too. And you know, there have been times where the entire series has been available for streaming, and I would find a day and I'd say, all right, today I'm going to work through parts 1 through 3, and tomorrow it's going to be 4 through 6. And I would just, you know, I'd just binge because I really like the filmmaking approach. I love the effects. You know, I like the innovation when it comes to things like how are we going to top what we did in our last film and not get it in a way where it just becomes parody. Although I think you could argue Jason X kind of falls into that line, but that's kind of why I like it. And also I'm friends with a guy who for a while was working on a script in development that was going to be the next Friday the 13th film. It has since, they've moved on to a different writer, but for about 2 years he was working on it. And to see it from that side was really cool. This would have been the one after the reboot. So not the Friday the 13th reboot, but it would have been the next one. So chatting with him, in Atlanta we have a ton of people in film, and this guy's been working in movies for a while, and so it was kind of cool seeing it from his perspective as well. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I guess my favorite Friday the 13th movie is the one that was never made.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully one day, right?
Yeah, you never know. It may end up morphing into something else, or you never know. Things come around. But this has been fascinating. I've been following the development of the game since the crowdfunding days. And watching as it came out. And one of the things I love about it is that it has become a wealth of content for people who live stream. It's one of those games that is frequently being live streamed either on YouTube or on Twitch or other platforms. And so even if you're not ready to jump in there just yet, you can watch as other people play. I've watched groups who play it together, and then which is great because you'll get the conversation that goes on within the room itself if they're all playing in the same room, as well as the action that's going on screen. And those are some of my favorites because you get to, especially when people do something like they happen to pick the car that only has two seats in it and there's a third person there. That's always the best.
Oh yeah, I know, right? What's going to happen? Who's going to get left behind?
And yeah,
it's fun watching a group of friends play it, and just, you know, a group of good streaming friends that are kind of used to playing and streaming together. There's some real special elements you kind of see from that. It's pretty funny. I mean, there's just probably hours and hours of content that you could just watch that we've seen. That's just, I don't know. It's hilarious. It's awesome. It's funny watching people get scared sometimes, and just even just watching people that have played it for so long and have so many hours in it, and they still have those moments of them like jumping or getting scared, you know? So,
yeah. Those, I mean, it's clearly that harkens back to the spirit of the film. So when you've got that, when you can see that happen, you could think, we got that right. You got that right. It's exactly the way you're supposed to be if you were watching this. You have that jump scare. And thankfully there's not like a thousand, fake jump scares with cats jumping out at you everywhere. That would get old really quick.
Yeah.
Well,
for sure.
Chuck, thank you so much for joining the show and talking about this. I really look forward to seeing, how this game continues as well as your future work. I'm really curious to find out more about that further down the line. And, thank you again for joining Tech Stuff.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us. It was great talking to you, and thanks for the support and everything.
All right, that was it. That was Chuck Brungart of Illphonic talking about Friday the 13th, the game. We are so appreciative for his time and getting to talk to him about what this process was like. It's definitely something that I really was interested in from the get-go, and I think it is a really fun experience from a personal perspective. Playing Jason is a thrill. Playing a counselor is a real challenge. And if you're playing with people who know what they're doing, you can actually get pretty far in this game as a counselor. It is still really, really hard, and you'll probably die, but there's a chance you'll make it out. And so if you are interested in this game, you can always go and check out YouTube videos or Let's Plays so that you can kind of get a feel for what the game is like. It's available on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. So it's on all the big consoles right now besides the Nintendo Switch. And you can check that out and try it out yourself. See if you have the what it takes to be a killer Jason or a surviving counselor. Don't go in the lake if you're a counselor. Jason can move wicked fast in the water. I found that out the hard way. And if you are in a car and you see me, let me in the car, please. I've been left behind so many times. But thanks again to Chuck Brungart and the team over at Illphonic for letting us have this conversation. We really appreciate it. We rarely get a chance to actually hear the behind-the-scenes process of what it was like to create a piece of technology and release it to the world and to really get an understanding of where those challenges are and how do you overcome them. So I greatly appreciate it. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, maybe there's a technology you really want me to cover or a company history that you've always wanted to hear more about or a person in tech, or maybe there's just someone else you want me to interview or have on as a guest host. I need to hear from you guys. Write me an email. That email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or you can drop me a line on Facebook or Twitter. The handle for the show is TechStuff, HSW. Remember, on regular episodes, not interviews, but regular episodes, I do stream live, and you can watch as I record and make mistakes and cry, and Ramsey has to comfort me until I've gotten through that emotional turmoil. You can see that happen if you go to twitch.tv/techstuff. I record Wednesdays and Fridays. The schedule is right there at twitch.tv/techstuff. Hope to see you there, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.